Welcome to
American Timelines. I'm Amy.
I'm Joe.
And this is American Timelines, the podcast that talks about all the interesting things in pop culture that happened throughout the years.
Yep, and then Amy's going to take a deep dive at the end of each episode to talk about something creepy.
Yes, my favorite.
This is episode four.
Episode four.
We've done four episodes. You know, they say if you do 20 episodes, you're a real podcast.
Real, is that what they say?
Something like
Somebody
that.
Somebody says that?
You have to get 25 or something before it succeeds.
You just made that up. You
no,
just
no,
pulled that out of your
I read
ass.
That somewhere.
I'm pretty sure you made that up.
Anyway, this is episode four, 1993.
1993.
All right, honey, what happened
so,
in 1993?
All kinds of things happened. The number one thing in my life was the coolest thing ever that I always think back to is I was lucky enough on New Year's Eve, 92 to 93, I went to a Beastie Boys concert on New Year's Eve
nice.
Up to Detroit. My parents let me and my three buddies,
nice.
My idiot buddies.
I went with you to a Beastie Boys concert.
Yes, but not then. I didn't know you yet this time. Right. But we went, and we didn't really party then. We didn't drink or do any drugs.
We were nerds.
But we went up way early.
Yeah.
So we got there like the second they let the doors open. We were like the first people in.
Oh, wow.
Like, why are you here already?
Yeah.
And we were like, we don't know. You know, so we dressed like the Beastie Boys in the So What You Want video.
Yeah.
So we wore flannels and stocking caps.
Yeah.
Not thinking that you're going to be inside of a concert venue that's super hot all day.
Oh, yeah.
So we ran open. It was standing room only, and the stage was like way across the room, and just nobody. We were the first people
yeah.
in. There was just nobody. So we just sprinted
yeah.
across the room because everybody started running. So we just sprinted towards the stage.
Nice.
And we were stage center, front row, like up against the guardrail.
Nice.
And we were like, holy cow, we're going to see the Beastie Boys in the front row.
Did you
middle.
Get to stay in the front row?
No.
I was going to say.
By the time the Beastie Boys came on, after three opening acts, Collective Soul was there and some other local
it
bands.
It doesn't matter.
It was New Year's Eve, but by the time we were front center, we were hanging on the guardrail. By the time Beastie Boys came up, we were all the way house right, stage left.
Oh, wow.
All the way to the corner.
Yeah.
That's what happened with me. I was in high school doing cool stuff. What about you?
I was in college.
You were still in college.
Southeast Missouri State University.
Nothing out of the top of your head, 93?
You know, my undergraduate years all blend together. Yeah.
There wasn't something you remember being a lead actress in something?
Probably. I was probably in theater stuff, but it all is kind of a blur.
1993.
Politics. Apartheid finally ended in South Africa.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
That affected me. The top song was Dream Lover by Mariah Carey.
Ugh.
So picture Dream Lover along with apartheid.
Yeah, I don't think those two go together.
The big movies included Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes, remember that.
And The Fugitive.
Oh, I love The Fugitive.
Yeah, that was good. I didn't see it too much later. But Mrs. Doubtfire, isn't it just Tootsie?
It's a little creepy if you think about it.
The
guy was a total loser, and he, rightfully so, Sally Field told him, you know, you're being an idiot. And then, you know, he lets his kid have a birthday party with barn animals in their house.
Yeah.
And then he dresses up like a woman to babysit. I don't know. It's just the whole thing seems
you
a little bit.
You can't do that anymore now. With
a little bit creepy. And talk about traumatizing your kids.
Yeah.
When they found out.
Is it any different than Tootsie? Isn't that the same plot
no,
as Tootsie?
No, it's different. Tootsie, he was an actor and he couldn't get parts. So he, there was a female role. So he dressed up like a woman to get on a soap opera.
1993.
Price of bear aspirin in
1993
was $3.84 per 100.
That's kind of pricey for bear aspirin.
I think
that's pricey now. Well, it must be higher now.
Must
but
be, I guess. I
think that'd be pricey now.
Measurement. I never understand these measurements.
No.
A Sony Radio Walkman was $29.98.
I had a Walkman.
I did too, with a tape player in it.
I had a bright yellow one.
I had it right on my belt all the time. Ours were black. You know, black was the only one to get.
Yeah.
The U.S. life expectancy with males were 72.2 years, females were 78.8 years.
Yes.
Now it's females 171
that's
and males
so not true.
60.
That's not true.
The Pentium processor was invented in 1993. Music producer Rick Rubin held an actual funeral complete with casket and grave for the word death after finding out it had been accepted into the standardized dictionary.
Death.
Like Def Jam. Amongst those who attended the funeral included Tom Petty, Flea, and Trent Reznor.
What?
Def, like Def Jam.
I understand
Rubin started
that.
Def Jam. So it was
so
accepted.
So he was mad that
it was accepted
it was mainstream?
Into the standardized dictionary, yeah. So
okay.
He had a funeral for the word because it was no longer cool.
And Tom Petty cared about that?
Apparently Tom Petty, Flea, and Trent Reznor all came to that.
That's really, that's a
maybe
odd
they, maybe
cast
he was,
of characters there.
Maybe he was just holding the funeral like in an area where those guys just happened to be
in an opium den or something, yeah, apparently.
Those guys just like stumbled upon. Tom Petty probably didn't even realize he was there.
No, right.
And Flea walks around with a sock on his wiener. That's right. And then Trent Reznor. Screw that guy.
Yeah.
1993.
World Series champions were the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yep.
I have no memory of that. Nope. Do you? Anything? Did you watch that World Series? Were
I don't,
you gripped to it?
No.
Do you even know what the Toronto Blue Jays are?
It's a baseball team, apparently.
Yeah. Do you know where Toronto is?
Yes.
Name seven Toronto Blue Jays.
You name seven Toronto Blue Jays.
I will.
No, let's not do that.
Moises Alou. Let's, no, I don't know if he's a Toronto Blue Jay.
No, wait a minute. I got a question. Yeah. Toronto's in Canada.
Yeah.
So why were they in the World Series? Like...
Oh, you think Canadians shouldn't be allowed? You
I'm just, I thought
Canadians?
It was an American thing, World Series.
No, there's the Montreal Expos, were another team.
Oh, really?
Canada.
So is it a North American thing? Why are there any Mexican sombreros or anything like that?
Well.
I mean, I'm just wondering why, I thought, like, we don't have, the NFL doesn't have any Canadian football teams.
They will.
Oh, they will.
Yeah, they have, because they have the Canadian Football League, they have the CFL.
But they're not going to.
They don't have the CLB.
You're a CLB.
Yeah, I've always wondered that, too, I guess. I will give you that. I always wonder how come weird. Baseball has a couple Canadian teams, but yeah. Other ones don't. NFL wants to have a London team. They want to have a Mexico team. They want to spread out there because it's just spreading their logo feces everywhere.
That's right.
Making a bunch of money. But, so, yeah, I don't know. But the Toronto Blue Jays were real good. They've always had Canada. Well, there's Canadian teams in the NHL.
That's true, but hockey came from Canada,
hockey's
right?
Hockey's like a Canada. Yeah, it's white, cold.
Sport. White and cold.
White and cold.
1993.
The Super Bowl champions were the Dallas Cowboys that year. They won a bunch of Super Bowls, so it all blends in together.
Yeah.
But I think, if I'm not mistaken, the great Mike Zimmer was a defensive coach for the Cowboys that year, and he's the Vikings head coach this year, so he's got a Super Bowl ring. Mike Zimmer's the best. NBA champions were the Chicago Bulls again, of course. Michael Jordan every year.
Big.
It was like every
McJordan. McJordan burger.
Back then, the NBA was just Michael Jordan and the Bulls and then some other teams sometimes.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah, so it was like just nonstop. And he had that gallons of barbecue sauce.
That's right.
And an American flag on his shoulder.
Yeah. We know a lot about him now after this podcast.
Yeah,
this
we do.
Podcast. A lot of little tidbits.
You know what we don't know about him?
It's dick size.
We don't know that, but we also don't know why he insisted on having a Hitler mustache.
Oh, that's right. Remember he did. Was that airline? In the 90s?
It was no, recently.
Well, then let's not talk about it. We're talking about 1993.
Oh, God damn it. Shot. Fuck. Okay. In 93, he was really good at basketball and had his tongue out and stuff. What? But, you know, he wasn't even good. He didn't even make his high school teams and stuff. He wasn't good.
Really?
He was good in college for North Carolina Tar Heels.
Oh, okay.
But he wasn't good then. He, like, got cut and stuff, and he sucked. He couldn't even dribble and didn't even know what a basketball was.
All right.
1993.
Stanley Cup champions, speaking of Canada, were the Montreal Canadiens. What a clever name that is.
That is, yeah.
Like the Houston Texans. I always love that. Just, oh, great. Just Texans. That's all they are.
The Ohioans.
Yeah,
that would
stupid.
Be a good one.
God.
All right. What's next?
U.S. Open Golf Lee Jansen.
We don't have to go through
US
every sport.
Sports.
God.
Okay. NCAA football team is Florida State. Well, I was kind of upset because you skipped all these, but North Carolina Tar Heels won the NCAA basketball championship that year. Tar Heels.
1993.
The top quotes from 1993 were, got milk. And it's from the California Milk Processor Board. The truth is out there from X-Files.
Oh, I love the X-Files.
And then, I don't like you, Ric Flair. You
No, that was not one of them.
That's not,
let's not go back to that. Let's not revisit that nightmare.
Oh, regarding concerns about AIDS, when asked to comment on Magic Johnson's desire to return to basketball for the 92-93 season, Charles Barkley responded, it's not like we're going to have unprotected sex with Magic on the floor.
Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Because the AIDS scare was still pretty bad, I think, at that time.
But don't you kind of wish Charles Barkley would have unprotected sex with Magic Johnson
not
on the floor?
No. It would make, not really,
it
no.
It would make basketball more interesting if they did that while they were playing.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, you're a homophobe.
1993.
Oh, Miss America that year was Lianza Cornett. Remember Lianza
from
Jacksonville, Florida?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Gary Hoy, a lawyer in Toronto, fell to his death in 1993 after he threw himself against a window on the 24th floor of a building in an attempt to prove to a group of visitors that the glass was unbreakable.
Ironic.
An act he had done twice before. The glass did not break, but popped out of the window frame.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
whoops.
That's terrible. That was in
that's
Toronto.
Terrible.
While the Blue Jays were winning the World Series.
Yeah, he was doing that.
Poor guy. Gary Hoy. Rest in
peace.
Yeah,
it's not the smartest thing. Oh, I'm going to, this is unbreakable. Watch me bash my head into it and show you.
All the times he did that, he was,
so he like
everybody
full
probably,
body flung himself under the window pane.
And each time before that, he probably felt so cool.
Picture being whoever that is that's visiting and just watch it. Let me show you how unbreakable it is. And he throws his whole body.
Well, I'm not buying that glass.
Slams his whole body into the window pane.
Yep.
It was ridiculous.
1993.
The conspirators of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing were caught when one of them tried to reclaim his deposit on the rental van they used to carry the bomb into the parking garage.
Idiots.
Is that really true?
Idiots.
What a dumbass.
Yep.
That proves anybody who's doing terror is a fucking idiot.
Yep.
Yeah, you heard me, terrorists.
Come get us, ISIS. Yeah,
the American timelines will destroy your ass.
1993.
The Super Bowl has required national anthem vocals to be pre-recorded since 1993, when Garth Brooks declined to pre-record and then refused to sing live until a dispute over debuting his music video, We Shall Be Free, during the game could be settled, resulting in a delayed kickoff. He did play the video.
So for now on, they're never singing.
Ever since that they have.
Oh, they're never singing live?
I don't know if that's true. Maybe that started then. Maybe it stopped recently because this year was Pink and the whole big thing this year.
She cracked her voice.
Yeah, but she was sick. She had the flu.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, was nonstop vomiting until right before.
Poor girl.
That reminds me of Joey Belmaggio was real sick, and he was in Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
And he was Seymour.
Yeah.
He was real deathly sick. And he couldn't get out of bed. He couldn't speak. He couldn't even move. Somehow he had the gusto. He got up and performed unbelievable vocals and was fabulous.
And then barfed.
And then got off stage and was like dead again.
Yep.
So I thought either
adrenaline.
Either, yeah, it's adrenaline. Yeah. Joey Belmaggio was unbelievable. So Joey Belmaggio, if you're listening, tweet us. Send us some more pics. I used to have naked videos of Joey Belmaggio.
All right.
Anyway. I love that guy. I wonder where he is.
1993.
During the Mississippi and Missouri River's Great Flood of 93, 23-year-old James Scott removed sandbags from an Illinois levee in order to strand his wife on the other side of the river so that he could keep partying.
Oh, my God.
He received life imprisonment for intentionally causing a catastrophe.
Life in prison for that? Holy shit.
His breach flooded 14,000 acres.
Oh, my God.
He got life for that, but Joey Buttafuoco only got a couple years.
Yeah, I know. I remember that because I lived in Missouri at the time, and I remember that flood, like all the sandbagging and everything that was going
really?
On.
Really?
Yeah, it was crazy.
Well, that guy caused it.
That guy.
He wanted to keep partying. Man, that guy's a hero.
1993.
Women were not allowed to wear pants on the U.S. Senate floor until 1993.
After they had to with just underwear?
Yeah, they had to wear just panties and like thongs until 1993. That's after senators Barbara Mikulski and Carol Moseley Braun defiantly staged a protest by wearing pantsuits.
Good for them.
Carol Moseley Braun!
And the pantsuit was born.
That's a controversial pantsuit she's wearing.
It is.
That's controversy.
That's right.
That's insane that we're that friggin' backwards.
Yeah, we had to wear skirts.
Jesus H. No wonder the Me Too movement is pissed.
No wonder Hillary never wears skirts. She's probably, that's probably a principle.
I ain't taking these damn pantsuits off, man. That's right.
She sleeps in those fuckers.
She's got a tattoo of a pantsuit under her pantsuits.
It's life size.
It is. What color do you think it is? Just flesh color pantsuit?
Oh, no, it's like hot pink or something. Oh, red.
Yeah. 1993.
Pepsi ran a contest in the Philippines in which it promised 1 million pesos, roughly $40,000, to the person who found the number 349 inside his bottle cap. Pepsi went on to mistakenly print 800,000 winning caps.
Oh, God.
Leading to outrage and death threats to Pepsi executives.
I guess so, because they weren't paying up for that.
Pepsi.
Somebody got fired for that. Whoever the bottle cap printer got fired.
The earliest, maybe we should invite whoever got fired and invite them
on the podcast
as our first guest.
1993.
The earliest known entry of an internet search on the word jihad was in reference to a anti-Barney the Dinosaur news group community called the Jihad to Destroy Barney.
Well, that's understandable.
Yeah, it sure is. You remember news groups?
No.
Back then, the internet was just news groups.
Oh, I don't remember.
Like when I was in college, I got to college, it was just news groups. There was nothing else on the internet, just like pictures.
Your email and pictures?
Yeah, you get like pictures. You could look up a picture of somebody like, oh, what does
Dr. Seuss
Alyssa
look
Milano
like?
Look like? Yeah. Or whatever, who was the big stars? And then, you know.
Yeah.
And then other than that, it was news groups. It was just like alt.newsgroups. And
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, it was just like any topic. Like
I wasn't on
Beastie
the internet.
Beastie Boys fans would talk and then like... I mean, every fan of everything. There's alt.music.whatever and Enya. I got in trouble on the Enya news group. You can still see it.
They're stirring up shit.
You can still find it somewhere, the old news groups. They're on Google Groups or something.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I was stirring up shit, talking smack to me. I thought, you know, it was like prank phone calls.
Right,
like,
exactly.
The internet wasn't a thing that you could be traced. I was just like messing with people.
Well, IP address.
And, yep, I sure got in trouble.
Yeah, I almost got kicked
out of school.
They can trace those.
They're like, you're threatening people and people are upset and whatever, and I was just messing around. But you know, you don't know at this day and age, you can't do stuff like that.
1993.
The celebrity accidental movie set death and the celebrity drug related death.
Oh,
do you know what they were from 1993?
No, wait, the accidental movie set death? Was it Brandon Lee?
Yeah, it's the only one. Brandon Lee instead of the Crow. Like, that was a big deal.
Big deal.
But that happened in 93, huh?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I thought it happened later.
I did, too.
Because, you know, Brian Richards started dressing like the Crow all the time.
Yeah, and that was much later.
I feel like it came out later because they had to probably debate whether they were going to do it and whatever.
Yeah.
The drug-related death, celebrity drug-related death. You know, people that love the Crow... Yeah. They love the Crow. Like, Richards was the Crow every year, and Crow posters, and everything's the Crow. And there's another guy, Pat Johnson, who I knew from work. He loved the Crow. He was the Crow every year.
Not many people that love the Crow these days. Now, you can't find a lot of people that are big fans of the Crow in this day and age.
And people don't even know what it is.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Pat still dresses like the Crow every day at work, I think. Now, the celebrity drug-related death is River Phoenix outside of the Viper Room.
Yep, that's right.
In Los Angeles. Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. Yep.
River Phoenix. Now, did you think he was real super dreamy?
No. I mean, he was all right.
You weren't.
I thought he was a good actor, but it was sad.
Yeah, River Phoenix, and then his brother is Joaquin Phoenix.
He's a good actor, too, but I think he's crazy.
He is crazy.
I think
some of that's an act.
That's probably true. 1993.
Dave Thomas, the founder of Wendy's, went back to high school in 1993 to get his GED, and then he was bullied. No. He went in 1993 to get his GED because he was worried that his success as a high school dropout might convince other teenagers to quit school. Because
teenagers so idolize Dave Thomas from Wendy's. 1993.
See if you can guess. Oprah did a 1993 interview with a celebrity, and it's the most watched interview ever in the history of television. What do you think?
Oh, God. I'm going to feel really stupid when you say it.
Well?
Michael Jackson?
You're exactly right.
No.
Now you don't feel so stupid.
Really?
Yeah, now you feel smart.
I don't even remember
now,
that.
Now you want me to keep this in.
I don't even.
It's when he revealed that he loved to have sex with children.
He never said that. No. Never said
I hope
that.
He didn't. I really hope he didn't. I just hope that he was just a sad
child.
Clown, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I do too.
I hope that he never did anything and he was just like...
He had a lot of issues.
Because this music was so great.
Yeah, he had good music.
I still love it. I'll jam out to Man in the Mirror anytime, any day,
yes,
in my Prius, super loud, windows down, shirt off. I don't care.
Yes, he does.
I'm starting with the Man in the Mirror.
That's
the greatest song ever composed by anyone.
No, it's not.
Oh, that's so great. And that's not even probably his best. Many people don't consider Man in the Mirror the best.
Most people.
Oh, I love that. 1993. Coachella was started in 1993 when the band Pearl Jam boycotted Ticketmaster for their high prices and played at the location during their Ticketmaster boycott tour.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that's how it started.
I remember them hating
Ticketmaster.
You couldn't buy their tickets off Ticketmaster. I remember that.
1993.
Oh, man. The first death row inmate exonerated by DNA evidence was wrongly convicted child murderer Kirk Bloodsworth in 1993.
Oh.
Listen to this. 10 years later... Bloodsworth discovered the actual killer had been incarcerated just one cell block beneath him.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that crazy?
That's super crazy.
Man, poor guy. You should have covered
his whole life ruined.
1993.
Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style sold over 800,000 copies in its first week, which became the record for a debuting artist and the fastest-selling hip-hop album ever until Eminem's album, The Marshall Mathers LP, bested it. Both were produced by Dr. Dre.
I love Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style. I remember that.
Snoop Dogg's awesome.
We danced in the clubs and that.
Snoop is great.
There was a club in Missouri. All the bars closed at 1, and so you had to go across the bridge to Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a bar called the Purple Crackle, and it was like just a meat market, and it was this huge club, and it was just constant like...
The Purple Crackle.
And we would go there, you know, and get it up till like... kicking it up to like 3 in the morning sometimes. It was crazy.
1993.
Okay, Mattel introduced Earring Magic Ken.
I remember this.
Featuring blonde
highlights.
They
thought he was super gay.
Purple shirt, lavender vest, necklace with a circle charm, and earring in its left ear.
Yes.
Kitsch-minded gay men bought the doll in record numbers, making Earring Magic Ken the best-selling Ken model in Mattel history. Oh, God, I love gay guys.
I do too.
God, don't you just look at this? Hello, look at this.
Oh my God, it's us.
Go get one. Get one for you. I'm buying one of these for all my friends.
Earring Magic Ken.
Oh, God.
That's awesome.
Gay guys are the greatest.
They are.
How could you ever not love gay guys? My God, you're missing out.
They make the world a sunnier place.
They make everything better.
Yes, they do.
Jeez. Ah.
That's hysterical.
Ah, that's funny. God, that's great.
1993.
When the U.S. Post Office issued the first stamp honoring Elvis in 1993, stamp collectors mailed letters with these stamps to bad addresses to have them marked
Return to sender. Love that. That's pretty clever.
That is clever.
That's a clever thing to do.
That's funny.
1993.
The reason the Super Bowl has big name performers is because in 1992, Fox counter-programmed Super Bowl's halftime show with In Living Color, who did a live Super Bowl spoof, complete with a game clock so viewers could see when the second half of the Super Bowl was going to start and switch back to CBS. Fox was not a Super Bowl airing entity at the time. The NFL brought Michael Jackson in for 1993 and have had huge artists ever since. I remember that. I remember switching because you couldn't wait to see what was going to happen on In Living Color. I remember switching channels.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I remember being excited about that. I don't remember what they did.
Yeah.
But I was probably just Jim Carrey talking with his butt.
Yep, probably was.
Fire Marshal Bill guy. When the film Clerks by Kevin Smith was first screened at the Independent Feature Film Market, only 12 people showed up, including Kevin himself and 7 people from the cast and crew and 2 random people.
Yep.
1993.
In the 1993 episode of Seinfeld, The Masseuse, Elaine was dating a guy who shared a name with serial killer Joel Rifkin.
I remember that episode.
She suggested him change his name to OJ, like the football player. The following year, OJ was charged with double murder.
Oh, gosh. I never caught that.
Oh.
That's funny.
Let's go back and watch that.
Yes.
Hey, do you remember when Chevy Chase had his own
late night show? See, I think I did see that, but I thought it was had already happened. Like, I saw it in rerun, so I thought it was a joke.
You thought it was a joke that already
because
happened.
Because it had already happened.
Yeah, so maybe not.
No.
Anyway, Chevy Chase had his own late night talk show in 93.
I remember that.
5 weeks. I do remember that, too. Mm-hmm.
We should make this a drinking game anytime we say, I remember that.
I remember that.
I remember that.
Well, I'm drinking a Hop Slam.
1993.
Ooh, Neil deGrasse Tyson has declined every interview since 1993 that has had his racial identity as the premise. That then becomes the point of people's understanding of me rather than the astrophysics. So it's a failed educational step for that to be the case.
He's so smart.
I didn't even know he was around in 93.
He's been around forever. I
got to spend a day with him once. It was
awesome. I know. I'm so jealous.
I like him. He's funny. And he's exactly like he is on TV. He's like
just real laid back.
He acts like every single person he's with is his best friend. He's known for 100. You feel like he's known you for 100 years. He just
like you're at ease. Immediately.
Oh, he's like grabbing my shoulders and shaking me and laughing at me and hitting me and stuff. Like it's like he's your best friend. He's awesome. Got it right. He's got it figured out.
Yeah, he does.
How to treat people.
1993.
Do you want to guess what the sound of the velociraptors barking at each other in the 1993 movie Jurassic Park actually was?
No.
You don't want to guess? It's actually the sound of tortoises mating.
Oh.
Yeah, now we got something to masturbate to.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, tortoises.
Good thing.
1993.
Cost of a Super Bowl ad in 1993. Can you guess? Remember what it was last episode?
$850,000.
You're exactly right. You know your Super Bowl ad history.
I just went up like in the increments of the last couple did.
You can put on your resume that you can name a year and I'll
I have that on there already.
Oh,
so,
you do?
Yeah, I already have that.
1993.
Okay, people played Magic the Gathering in 93.
I never played that game.
I can't believe that. That seems way
newer or something, right?
The Bridges of Madison County was a book that people were reading. The Christmas gifts were Atari Jaguar. I don't remember that. Power Rangers action figures people played with. Barbie Batgirl gift set. Beanie Babies were released in 93. That was a big deal.
Yeah, it was.
Those were crazy. Remember that whole crazy Beanie Babies thing?
Wanda had them.
She did?
She had them all in her cubicle. Wanda was my supervisor at the AMA in Chicago.
That was way after 93, though.
I know. But she had, they were all in the window of her cubicle. And when she would leave for the day, I would put them in sexual poses.
Yeah, that's what you do, yeah.
Yep. So she'd come back in and she'd be like, you just can't help it, can you?
My brother, who had action figures he still has action figures way past when you're supposed to have action figures, always looked down upon people that put them in sexual. He always said, that's a true mark of somebody who doesn't appreciate collectibles. That sexual
nerd.
So you know what I do? I go down to his office now. To this day, we work in the same
place.
Make
him do it.
Yeah, I go down to his office, and he knows I've been there because they're all like 69ing all his action figures.
Yeah, if he wants you to do something, he just has to say he hates it, and then you'll do it.
And I'll do it. Yeah, that's right. That's the annoying brother.
1993.
Popular movies were Beethoven's Second, Carlito's Way.
Carlito's Way was good.
Cool Runnings. Demolition Man, Falling Down, remember that? I remember that.
Yeah.
Free Willy, Groundhog Day.
That's great.
Grumpy Old Men, A Decent Proposal. That was a big thing.
Oh, Proposal. Yeah.
Everybody was talking about that whole thing. What would you do on the radio? Everybody, what would you do? Would you do it for a minute? I mean, just so you know, babe, I would let you do whatever you want with anybody for...
Oh, me too.
For like... I'm like 50 bucks.
Yeah, I'd be like, 50 like, bucks is good money.
Yeah, you
money.
Can bang my wife for 50.
50 bucks is good money.
Fact, I'll go outside right now and ask the neighbors if they want to bang you for 50 bucks.
Wait a minute.
No, okay. I'm kidding,
a
honey.
Minute.
I'm kidding.
But for $1 million?
$1 million?
Yeah, we could talk about it.
I don't know. I mean, maybe when we're 70, because it's not like I'm...
because they'll be lining up when we're 70.
Well, for you, babe.
Yeah, right.
You're a hot 70-year-old.
Yep.
1993.
The Pelican Brief. Oh, your favorite.
Nope.
Philadelphia. Oh, Philadelphia.
Oh, my God. My mom and I went to see that together. And
did you just cry the whole time?
We pulled into the garage after that, and we both sat there and bawled in the car.
Rookie of the Year. Rudy. Did you ever see Rudy? You probably don't give a shit about
Rudy. No, I don't give a shit about Rudy.
I loved Rudy.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah. Schindler's List.
Oh, that's another one. I never saw that. You've never seen it. You've got to see that.
I don't think I can.
We're watching it tonight.
No, we're not watching everything tonight.
Listen, I
don't think I can do it.
You can.
I didn't bawl and cry,
but it was a packed movie theater, and it was the most surreal thing that happened, because after that movie, the credits started to go and it was completely silent and nobody moved. And then everything ended and the lights came up and everybody still was just sitting in their seats and nobody moved. It was so bizarre because everybody
was just with their jaw
on the floor.
Every
it was so
like
good.
1993.
Searching for Bobby Fischer. I remember that. Sister Act 2. Back in the Habit.
Back in the Habit.
Jeez. That's when they had great.
Yeah.
Two like
sequel titles.
Yeah. Back in the Habit. That's hilarious. I didn't know that's what it was called. Sleepless in Seattle. Remember that?
I had the soundtrack. I loved that music.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was all old, like Frank Sinatra and like all that old
kind of
music.
Did you see the movie?
Yeah, I saw the movie. I liked it.
You did?
Yeah.
What are you, a big rom-com?
I'm not, but I did like that one.
It's a sad. Yeah. It's kind of sad, I guess. I don't know. Isn't that where Meg Ryan has the orgasm in the store?
No, that's when Harry Met Sally.
Oh. And not the store, at the restaurant.
Yep.
When Harry Met Sally. Okay, The Three Musketeers, Tombstone, True Romance, What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Oh, that's a good one.
1993.
Most popular TV shows were 60 Minutes again. Home Improvement.
60 Seinfeld, Minutes has staying power.
Roseanne, it sure does. Morley Sabre is such a badass. Grace Under Fire, Coach, Frasier. Biggest Pop Artist of 93, Ace of Base.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. Just Ace of Base.
Just Ace of Base.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of them, but we'll get to those. Naughty by Nature, Bebo Bryson, Ice Cube, Janet Jackson, Jodeci, Madonna.
Corrections and apologies. Corrections and apologies, y'all. Corrections and apologies, y'all.
Paul Lynch was the name, not Paul Lank.
Oh, okay.
Of the guy from
a cut and paste
the British guy who did all the push-ups with his finger.
Oh, God,
and you
yes.
said, you claimed it never happened. Anyway, I looked the guy up. He was super, like, he did them naked for some reason. So
naked.
He was all muscle.
So they were kind of cock push-ups.
And he didn't have any hair. He had a G-string or something, but he didn't have any hair. He had no body hair at all, but he was super muscly. But he also broke all the bones in his finger.
I guess so.
Yeah, so I don't know why.
I still don't understand how you can do push-ups with a finger.
Yeah, he did 124 of them.
No way.
Not 125, damn.
I still don't believe it.
But don't you think some guy that maybe weighs, like, 40 pounds
no
totally beat
no
him
no
well he did it and he's stupid because he broke his finger, but you know what, they showed the picture of him doing
it was in a knuckle.
He's kind of like bending his finger a little bit,
so it's on his knuckle,
not like at the tip of his finger. I don't
think. Oh well, that makes a little more sense. It's still pretty unbelievable.
He still broke all his bones, so
idiot.
He's an idiot.
Corrections and apologies. Corrections and apologies. Yeah.
Joey Buttafuoco stuff. I have a bunch of stuff on this that is important. 90.
Buttafuoco, 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 Buttafuoco.
That's not.
Oh,
Amadeus,
sorry.
Amadeus. That's not even a.
Not even a 90s.
So there's a whole bunch of things. So we specifically said we'd go back and check this out.
Yes.
Because we were like,
if he was in jail and stuff.
Definitely in jail.
Yeah.
And you wondered if Lisa Fisher,
Amy Fisher.
Amy Fisher was still in jail. And neither one of them are in jail.
Oh, wow. Are they married? They got married.
They did not get married. No, they didn't. But here's what happened. We'll start with Fisher. Amy Fisher was sentenced to 5 to 15 years in prison.
Oh.
She served 7.
Okay.
Was granted parole in May 1999 after Supreme Court Judge Ira Wexner vacated her guilty plea and shortened her sentence. Joey Buttafuoco denied having an affair with Fisher. In October 92, the Nassau County District Attorney stated that Buttafuoco would not be prosecuted. However, in February of 93, the case against him was reopened due to rape charges made by Fisher. She testified against him in court, and based on this testimony and hotel receipts dated before Fisher's 17th birthday with Buttafuoco's signature
statutory.
On them, he was charged with statutory rape, and he pled guilty in 93. He served 6 months in prison.
Okay.
Okay?
So he
was only in there for 6 months. She was in there for 7 years. Do you want to take a wild stab at what Amy Fisher might have done after jail?
Probably was on a reality show.
Nope. She became a columnist for the Long Island Press.
Oh.
She dictated a book about her experiences. If I knew, wait for it. In 2003, she married Louis Bolera. and they had three children before divorcing in 2015. However, that's not all she did.
Uh-oh. Stripper?
No. Oh. A little bit worse.
Sex worker.
Not a worker. Well, maybe. I guess it's a worker. In October 2007, the New York Post published allegations that Fisher's husband, Lou, had sold a sex tape of the couple to Red Light District Video of Los Angeles. That same year, nude pictures of her from the video were posted on various internet sites, so she decided to make more of those videos.
And you looked up some of the videos.
She became a porn star. No, I didn't watch any of them, but she did porn for
you,
a few years.
You probably looked at a couple stills.
I didn't look at any. I actually didn't look at any of her naked, but on the Wikipedia or whatever, there's pictures of her, like, giving the duck lips and like a bathing suit and stuff, and all fake stuff, it seems like. So, yeah, she looks like a porn star. So she did porn for a few years, but she quit.
She got chlamydia and quit.
Yeah, in 2008, she announced she was suing the Red Light company or whatever that was originally publishing the pictures, and then she decided to settle her differences and then do porn with them for a while.
Jeez.
And then she, after a while, she did a pay-per-view adult film titled Amy Fisher, Totally Nude and Exposed.
She's milking that 15 minutes of fame.
Yep. Corrections and apologies, y'all. A Real World, we talked about MTV and then Real World. Mm-hmm. I guess that they're probably on Real World 78 right now.
Yes. But
they are on Real World 32.
Jesus.
And then I yelled that there's no MTV that plays music video. Probably MTV 7. MTV Classic does play some rock videos. Corrections and apologies. Corrections and apologies. Yeah. I also said that, I don't know why I said this, but if you listen back to episode 3, I did say that anyone who's ever lived in Missouri is a piece of shit. I got carried away, and I didn't mean that. I know a lot of people who have lived in Missouri.
You do. You're married to one.
I really didn't mean that. Sometimes you say things for effect, and it just kind of makes it better.
It's fine.
All right, that's it. I think that's all I got for the corrections, too.
We'll give you a deep dive.
I'm going to talk about the murder of Mia Zapata, who was a lead singer for the Seattle punk band The Gits.
Mia Zapata.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll give you a deep dive.
So, Mia Zapata was born August 25th, 1965, in Louisville, Kentucky. And from being a child, she was real into music. She could play the guitar and the piano by the time she was 9. She was influenced by punk rock and jazz and blues. Hmm. And she had a real, amazing voice. And then in 1984, she enrolled in Antioch College.
This is a punk singer?
Yeah.
She had a real good voice.
But she did, yeah. In 1984, she enrolled in Antioch College in Yellow Springs, Ohio.
Oh, I've never heard of that. And I'm
liberal
from
arts student.
She's from Louisville, Kentucky originally.
Yes. She was
then
born
she
there.
She went to college in Ohio.
That's right. In September 1986, she and three friends formed a punk rock band, The Gits.
1986 was the year that Ron Simmons made his debut in wrestling. So that's when The Gits were...
That was the same time. And in 1989, the band relocated to Seattle because that was the big rock scene.
Relocated from where? They formed in Ohio?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and they relocated to Seattle in 1989.
That's right. And so she got a job at a local bar, and they all moved into an abandoned house, and they called it the Rat House.
Who else was in the band, did it say? Women? All women?
No, she's the only woman.
Oh, okay, she's the only lady in the band.
Yes.
She and her bandmates moved to Seattle. She got a job at a bar.
Gotcha. So they released a series of real well-received singles on independent record labels from 1990 to 1991.
The Gits?
The Gits.
Have you heard of this, them? Before this?
I had not heard... No, I had not heard of them.
I just want to make sure. Am I the only idiot?
No.
But I feel like the name sounds familiar.
Yeah, I do too.
But I don't think I can name any songs.
I mean, I listened to it after.
You did?
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's good.
Really?
Yeah.
Like you would download it right now and pay for it?
I think it'd be interesting to see what Audrey would think about it.
Oh.
You know?
Let's see what Audrey thinks about The Gits. Audrey Rose?
Hello?
I just made you watch a couple videos of The Gits. What is your initial reaction to The Gits?
Punk rock, yo.
So you know that it was punk rock?
Yeah.
How do you know it was punk rock?
Because, the beat and, the drums is good.
And it was real loud?
Yeah, it's like...
Have you ever heard punk rock before?
Yes.
When?
In this show called Best Friends Whenever.
There's a show called what?
Best Friends Whenever.
What? Is that on Netflix?
Yes. I already finished the season. It's about these two best friends, and they time travel, And it's really fun because they went back to, like, the 50s or, like, the 70s. I don't remember. But, like, and they traveled there. And, like Sid was a tomboy and Shelby was, like, the girly girl. So Sid went with the punk rock people and Shelby went with the disco people. So then I got to hear the punk rock people.
And this was in the 50s?
Or, like, 70s. Like, I don't really remember.
Okay. So punk rock, what did the punk rock people look like in this show?
They had, like, weird hair. Sky had orange hair, and they had, like, spikes coming up with his hair, like, out of everywhere.
Okay.
And they had, like, mohawks and, like, crazy hair.
Okay, that's pretty punk rock. So what was better, the band in that TV show or the Gits?
Band in the TV show.
What did you think about the lead singer of the Gits? Did you think she was pretty?
I thought it was a boy.
No, it was a girl lead singing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's pretty.
Even though you thought it was a boy?
Yes.
All right, that was Audrey's reaction to the listening Gits. To the Gits. Okay, so as they were making a name for themselves in the local music scene, they often played shows with their friend's band, which was called 7 Year Bitch.
Oh, I've heard of that. 7 Year
you?
Bitch?
You've heard of that?
I feel like it. This all sounds familiar.
So in 92, they released their debut album called Frenching the Bully.
Huh.
And then their reputation was increasing when the grunge scene really was starting to hit Seattle.
Okay.
She came from an affluent family, but she often lived without material comforts. As her father described it, Mia lived in two different worlds. She lived on two different sides of the street. The straight side on one, with parochial schools and affluent family and tennis clubs. She crossed the streets, material things didn't mean anything to her. Hmm. And her music often led to a rejection of financial comfort. She was
kind of like Vanilla Ice.
Stop.
What?
She was this great person. She was really a good friend.
Oh, really?
She was a little shy, but she helped her. You know, she would help people kick drugs. She was a real dynamic performer. Like the other band members would say that they would get off the stage and the people in the audience didn't even know they had been in the band because she was so magnetic.
You know, this is going to sound weird, but that's exactly what I feel about Matt Truman. Truman Ego Trip. Like, it's not just, he's got a whole band.
Yeah.
But he is like a rock star in a band. Like, he's got feather boas and like white glass.
He's like Elton John.
He's like Elton John. He's just like, it's a party fun atmosphere. So I bet she was like that.
So she was really well connected to her community. She was the hub of a lot of social circles. She drew all sorts of people together who otherwise might never have met.
Huh.
The band, which included guitarist Joe Spleen, drummer Steve Moriarty, and bassist Matt Dresdner, met in Ohio in 1986.
Did you say Joe Spleen?
Yeah.
Spleen. The guy's name was Joe Spleen?
I think that was a stage name.
God, that's a great
name. I want to say that was a stage
name. Joe Spleen! I looked that guy up.
So, within no time, the band had developed quite a following amidst the city's underground punk scene. Many would group them together with bands like Nirvana and Pearl Jam, but Mia brought a voice of femininity to the grunge scene that had not been seen yet. Although the group was 75% men, the band as a whole and Mia Zapata in particular gained quite a following among the feminist community in Seattle at the time.
Okay. Feminists.
In 1990, after moving to Seattle, they went on to a very successful international tour. I want to say that Beck even opened for them. I think I read that
somewhere.
You
want to say it?
Yeah, I think I read that Beck opened for them.
I'll just look it up.
And they didn't have a record label, so they were doing all of this without a record label. Throughout the recording of the second album, the band had planned a large U.S. and European tour as well as many local shows.
Unknown homeless hippie kid named Beck opened the show.
See? I was right.
Followed by a mariachi band and a quinceañera.
Yep. So they were being courted by various recording labels. But unfortunately, before the group could finish and record their second album, which was called Enter the Conquering Chicken, the band was shocked by the murder of their iconic lead singer.
Mia Zapata?
Yeah.
She was murdered?
She was murdered.
You bring her up and I get all excited. I've never heard of her and now she's dead.
So here's the deal.
Joe Spleen did it.
Here's the deal.
No, it's done. Joe Spleen did it.
So at around 2 o'clock a.m. on July 7th, 1993.
Yeah.
Do you want to fill us in on what was happening?
Well,
July
7th,
1993.
It's funny you should say that because it was 2 in the morning. So that was really July 6th, 1993. That evening, it was like late in the evening, was 2 a.m. So,
well, it was earlier, July 7th, but it was...
That's when this happened, but earlier in that evening before it became the morning, it was July 6th, which was a Tuesday. And just a few days before that, some groundbreaking things happened on that 4th of July. And we're only 2 days after an unbelievable thing in the WWF was they had an event.
Jesus Christ.
They had a wrestling event on the USS Intrepid, was a big aircraft carrier.
Yes.
They did a wrestling event on the aircraft carrier. And the whole event was a contest to see if anybody could slam Yokozuna. Yokozuna was a big, fat sumo wrestler guy.
Oh, my God.
And nobody could pick him up and slam him. They had all kinds of athletes trying to. They had Lee Rusan, a former New York Giants running back, Bob Backlund, Peter Taglianetti from the Pittsburgh Penguins, a hockey player, Scott Burrell, the Charlotte Hornets. Charlotte. Yeah. Shout out to Charlotte. Woo! Scott Steiner, Tatanka, Bill Frelick of the Detroit Lions, Crush, and Macho Man Randy
Savage.
All those
people
tried to body slam. This guy, the sumo wrestler, just stood in the ring.
And they all just, like, threw their bodies at him?
Now, he was a pro wrestler, but his gimmick was
that
he was a
sumo wrestler.
Japanese guy.
Yeah.
And so he was a sumo guy. But they all couldn't lift him. They all just couldn't lift him. But then, on this aircraft carrier, here comes a helicopter flying in on 4th of July. And the helicopter.
You probably watched this.
I watched it, of course. The helicopter came flying in, and Lex Luger, who they were trying to make their American hero after Hulk Hogan, they were trying to make him the big hero. He gets off this helicopter, and he's wearing super tight jeans with no belt and an American flag shirt.
Oh,
and he rips off the shirt, and of course, he body slams Yokozuna.
Did he get flack for ripping the American flag shirt?
No, he didn't rip it. He just took it off. But I think in the middle of all that, Yokozuna took a break while people were trying to slam him, and he ate a bowl of rice. Lex Luger body slammed him. And then on television that night, before this tragic event happened, before poor Mia Zapata might have been home watching, she might have been watching Rescue 911 on CBS, or a movie, A Triumph of the Heart, the Ricky Bell story. Or if she switched to ABC, she might watch reruns of Full House, Hanging with Mr. Cooper, Roseanne, Room for Two, and Jack's Place. Do you remember Room for Two?
No.
A sitcom with Linda Lavin and Marsha Heaton.
I do not remember that.
Linda Lavin's the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, I know Linda Lavin.
Anyway, so those were the things on TV. The number one song was Weak.
Weak.
You know who sings Weak?
Oh, is it Belinda Carlisle?
No. SWV, the greatest.
Oh, okay.
I get so weak in the knees,
okay.
I can hardly speak.
Okay.
I lose all control.
Alrighty.
And something take over me. Janet Jackson, That's the Way Love Goes.
Yes.
That's the way love goes. Tag team. Whoop, there it is.
Oh, yeah.
Whoop, there it is. UB40. I can't help falling in love.
Oh, right. That's right.
With Drew. H-Town, Knockin' to Boots.
Jeez.
Robin S., Show Me Love.
I can guarantee you, Mia Zapata wasn't listening to any of...
You weren't listening to the popular stuff?
Mia Zapata wasn't.
Oh, Mia Zapata wasn't.
I guarantee you she wasn't.
Sure, you were at Purple Crackle.
Yeah, I was.
Dr. Dre, Dre Day. Dun, 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 yeah. Dun,
all right, dun, move on.
Exposé, I'll Never Get Over You, Getting Over Me.
I'll give you a deep dive.
At around 2 o'clock a.m. on July 7th, 1993... She left the Comet Tavern in the Capitol Hill area of Seattle, which was a place she liked to go.
Oh.
And she stayed at a studio space in the basement of an apartment building that was located a block away from there. And she stopped and visited a friend who lived on the second floor briefly.
Okay.
And that was the last time she was seen alive. She may have walked a few blocks west or north to another friend's apartment, or may have decided to take the long walk south to her home.
Why does this sound familiar?
There was a Forensic Files about this, but we didn't watch it.
I think we did.
A man, at about 3 o'clock a.m., a man about two blocks from the Comet Tavern heard a scream around 3 o'clock a.m., and then a woman discovered her body in the street at around 3:30 a.m. near the intersection of 24th Avenue South and South Washington Street in the Central District. The woman ran to the fire department, which was really close by, to report it, and then they come. And
this is at 3, by 3 in the morning?
Yeah, and her body is still warm. And then the police arrive. They note that her body is laid out. Her arms are outstretched, and her legs are straight down, crossed over each other, kind of like a crucifix position.
Huh.
She's wearing a hoodie, which was pulled over her face, and then one of the strings was tied around her neck and strangled her. It didn't appear that she was attacked and killed at that scene. There was no blood at the scene or anything. She had no ID on her, so at first they didn't know who she was, but the medical examiner was a fan of the Gits and had been to their concerts, and he recognized her.
Oh my God, this is the best exam
shocked.
I've ever done.
So according to him, if she had not been strangled, she would have died from the internal injuries suffered from the beating. According to court documents, an autopsy found evidence of a struggle in which Zapata suffered blunt impact to her abdomen and a lacerated liver. They looked at her boyfriend, who was, I guess he was kind of a scary guy. Not a lot of people liked him, but he was real super cooperative. He went in whenever he took two lie detector tests. He went in.
The boyfriends are always creepy guys.
And he helped the police. He had a really solid alibi. They investigate her friends and family. She was also raped. That was the other part of it.
Oh.
But
they always are. Yeah. That's why I had to stop watching that show. Every single woman is raped all the time.
But the police didn't want to release all the information. They didn't release that she was raped.
Suspects to know that stuff, and then they know they did. Oh, you have information the public doesn't know.
And also she had bite marks on her chest. And they couldn't do impressions, like, you know how they can do impressions and get dental?
Yeah.
But they couldn't do that. But there was trace amounts of DNA from saliva.
Yeah.
And they had enough forethought to collect that,
mm-hmm.
Even though at the time there wasn't any technology.
Saliva couldn't.
Yeah, there was, but it wasn't.
So
good,
has it since been?
Because it was. Have they? Well, just wait.
Oh,
just
gosh,
wait.
I can't wait.
So there were scuff marks on her shoes and belt, indicating she may have been dragged. And, you know, that kind of helps to figure out how many assailants there were, because at first, the way she was laid out, it makes you think, was there two people, one carrying her arms and one carrying her feet?
Right.
But the scuff marks would indicate if she's dragged, then it's going to be one person probably. And there's no eyewitnesses, which furthers the theory that the attack didn't happen there, because it was not super busy, but it was kind of a busy
bar
area.
Well, the area around the bar.
Yeah.
But it's still at 2:30 in the morning, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
God, if she just stayed home and watched Full House.
I know. So there's not, they don't have a lot to go on. There's no witnesses, and there's just a little bit of evidence. The Seattle music community, including Nirvana, Pearl Jam, and Soundgarden.
Those are three awesome bands, if you haven't heard them.
They helped raise $70,000.
Really?
To hire a private investigator for 3 years.
Back in 93?
Yes. They did benefit concerts.
They did a benefit concert?
Yes. They did a bunch of them. Yeah.
70 grand?
Yes. And they hired a private investigator for 3 years.
God, imagine if you could say you were at those concerts.
I know.
People can.
I know.
Went to those.
But the...
And now tragically, Chris Cornell's dead, and Nirvana guy's dead.
Nirvana guy. Kurt Cobain. Yeah.
You know, it's not just me being an idiot. I forget common things. Like the other day, I was trying to work on the computer. I forgot what the word control panel was.
Yep.
Sorry.
All right. So then the funds dried up without any major breaks in the case.
All that money?
Mm-hmm. But the investigator was named Lee Heron, and she continued to investigate on her own time even after that. But then in 1998, after 5 years of investigation, Seattle police said, we're no closer to solving the case than we were right after the murder.
Do you think Lee Heron was a big Gitz fan? That's why she kept studying it?
I don't know. It could be. But then in 2003, they started to, like, the technology started to improve. And they put the DNA. One of the other problems with the DNA was there was such a small amount that in 1993 they knew that if they tried to test it and they goofed it up and made a mistake, it would be gone.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to risk
it. Wait until
which
the
was
future.
A good call. That was a good call by police not to try it and then they would never know. So they saved it.
We'll wait till far into the future when the guy's already dead.
And then in 2003 they put it through CODIS, which is the
CODIS.
Yes, that's the database, DNA database.
Oh, of all those creeps, they get all the DNA.
They put it in 2001, I think it was, but it didn't take, there was no hits.
Ought 1.
But then in 03, there Ought was 3. A hit. It was a Florida fisherman named Jesus Mesquia, and he had come from Cuba in 1980. The DNA evidence was used to tie him to the murder. A DNA profile was extracted from the saliva found on her body and kept in cold storage. And the technology was called STR technology.
Huh.
The investigators had to go to Florida, locate this guy, Jesus Mesquia, and question him. And they get there and he's gone.
Oh.
But his wife...
He lived in Florida?
Yeah.
He was all the way in Florida, across the whole country.
I mean, this is 2003.
Yeah, that's true. Ought 3.
But his wife, he gets there and he's gone, but his wife gives him all the information they need. Like, she's like, oh, you know, because because the reason they had his DNA, because he was arrested in Florida for burglary and domestic abuse in 2002.
He was beating
So she was probably like, yeah, go get him.
Get that son of a bitch.
So they spot his vehicle a few days later in Miami, and they interview him.
Does it say what kind of vehicle?
No. But they interview him, and he denies ever being in Seattle at all or murdering anyone.
Huh.
And then they show him a photo lineup of 10 murdered girls. And he says, no, he doesn't know any of them. He hasn't seen any of them, which is a trap.
Right.
Because the saliva's on her. So
yeah.
If he would have said he knew her, at least he could have said, oh, we got together, or
right.
We, you know,
he could have said, oh yeah, we made out, and then
right,
like, oh,
right,
yeah, whatever.
But he's, but there's, but he says,
I don't know her.
No,
at all.
He doesn't know her and all that. He has a history of violence towards women, including domestic abuse, burglary, assault, and battery. All his ex-girlfriends and his wife had filed reports against him.
All of them?
Mm-hmm. There was also a report of indecent exposure on file against him in Seattle.
Great.
People within 2 weeks of Zapata's murder. So he,
people got to see his balls.
Yes.
Close to
and
him.
It was close by. It was nearby the area she was murdered. But there was no other prior link between Ms. Kia and Zapata. He had lived about 3 blocks from where she was dumped, though.
He lived right by there, and he got his balls out sometimes.
Okay. He
right? Because he was indecent exposure.
Yes, right.
Or was he just peeing?
I don't know. So he never testified in his own defense. He still maintains his innocence. The theory that they have is that he saw her leave the bar, and he followed her a short distance before he attacked. She had she was listening to music, and she had headphones on.
Walkman.
And it covered her ears, so she would have been unaware of any danger.
Yeah, Walkmans were
until he
then.
Grabbed her and dragged her to his car, where he assaulted her in the back seat. He was convicted in 2004, and initially sentenced to 37 years, which he appealed, and then he was then sentenced to 36 years, which I don't think is a very long prison term for murder. Personally, 36 years.
Well,
I mean,
is it? Do you think it?
People usually get life for murder, but he's been in prison since January 2003.
Anybody who rapes should get have their dick cut off.
In the aftermath of her murder, friends created a self-defense group called Home Alive, which disbanded in 2010, and they organized benefit concerts and released albums with the participation of Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Soundgarden and Heart.
Alice in Chains.
Presidents of the United States of America. I remember them.
A lump. Lump,
yep.
Lump.
Joan,
she's in
and
my
Joan
head.
Jett also recorded
millions
an album
of peaches,
with the
peaches for free. Millions.
That's
of
enough. Joan Jett also recorded an album with the surviving members of the Gits called Evil Stig, which is Gits Live backwards.
Huh. Joan Jett rules.
In 2005, there was a documentary, The Gits Movie, which was produced about Mia Zapata's life, the Gits, and the Seattle music scene.
Also, Zapata means shoe in Spanish.
Viva Zapata by punk band 7 Year Bitch was released in June 1994 as a tribute to her. And then some of the songs on that album address the issue of her murder directly. Following her death, Joan Jett and Kathleen Hanna wrote a song called Go Home.
Kathleen Hanna is married to Ad Rock of the Beastie Boys.
Oh, wow.
She's from Bikini Kill. Boom.
Good.
You didn't know
that's
that.
Good.
Boom, dropping knowledge. So, like Galileo dropped the orange.
Her death caused a sense of defeat and fear within the Seattle community. The Seattle Times marked Zapata's murder as the moment the Seattle scene lost its sense of invincibility. Kristen Storm recalls Zapata's death as a reality check, stating, "They were all very tough people, and as a group of women, they're all really strong, outspoken, and hard-hitting, very opinionated women, and that perception of we're not victims at all in any way, and this can't happen to women that aren't victims." And I think Zapata's death shattered that myth for us and showed that it happens to all types of women. Her death is cast often as a symbol for feminist activism. But Dresner, one of the bandmates, said that it was like she was sainted, and that was very peculiar. She became this icon that had very little to do with her actual life.
What did Joe Spleen have to say about it?
Oh, his real name is Andrew Kessler.
Joe Spleen?
Yes.
His name isn't even Joe?
No, it's Andrew Kessler.
Screw Andrew Kessler. You can't just use the name Joe Spleen all willy-nilly.
He said, "Mia had no social or political agenda and no real interest in that stuff." Yeah. Also, after her death, she quickly acquired a symbolic status as a feminist icon, martyr, and poster child for rape and violence toward women, which had nothing to do with who she was as an actual person.
And sometimes that's the way it happens, but people need an icon, you know.
Yes. That is the story of the murder of Mia Zapata.
Yeah, that's good. That's crazy how that happens. Something tragic like that happens.
Well,
a rock star or somebody, and then they turn it
because
into,
also because stranger attacks are actually kind of rare.
Yeah,
it's usually somebody
know,
you know.
Yeah.
So
and just in general, it just reiterates the point of especially back then you just couldn't be a woman and go anywhere by yourself at night, especially that late in the night.
Well, if I can remember all the times that I walked alone home from a bar, I mean that's so scary.
You're so lucky.
I know. Yeah. I mean, and she was a tough cookie, so.
I just remember being in college and girls wanting to go home by themselves. I'm like, you cannot.
Yeah.
Because there's a million people just waiting to rape everyone outside.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of world we live in?
I know. It is. It's sad.
That's a great way to end this podcast. We'll all just be sad until
crying,
the next episode.
Everything.
But the next episode is 94 when I graduate high school. So I'm getting a little bit older.
So you're going to be getting some trim.
I'll be getting trim and trim and more trim. I got plenty of trim in the 90s, baby.
I know. All right.
Anyway, I like you. That was a good story. That was good.
Is that all right?
Exciting. Yeah, I didn't put anything about a rock star. It's kind
of
cool.
Well, maybe we can play some of her music or something.
Yeah.
I don't think we can. Oh, we can't. It's
like copyrights. Maybe I'll do some karaoke versions, which is probably not okay either.
I don't know.
Anyway, is there anything else we forgot about 93?
I think that is it. Stupid. I think it's time to get out of here, Chuck Berry.
Get out of here, Chuck Berry. Stupid Jeff Barton graduated in 93, and he's got a skinny head. Actually, the class of 93 of my high school...
They all had skinny heads.
No, a lot of those people are dead. That's what we should talk about.
Well, we don't need to talk about it.
More than normal. Anyway, this has been American Timelines, episode...
Four, 1993.
Get the fuck out of here, Chuck Berry.
Get out of here, Chuck Berry.
Peace. US.
Music from the album Everybody's Got One by Matt Truman Ego Trip, available at Amazon.com.